This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/ifanboy.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 863, brought to you by Cedar Draw Cider and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Skip the introduction, pulsate the lip function. The junction get rushed by some grimy people busting weed. Splatter your melon like some attic of felons. Using fire on good, blood skull for heart swelling. Insert the spasm, yes, the dirty hurt has them. Thoroughbred thugs insert the phantasm. Verbal smarts spark the word. Vision my scripture, exotic wine holding nine. Picasso pictures, when the rhyme pivot you now. Limit your chance, bodyguard the lyric with unlimited stance. Word seen the zing on down to Beijing.
Hello, my name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host Josh Flanagan.
Hey there.
And welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 863. Yay.
Woo.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read our comics, and one of us picks our favorite, we call it the Pick of the Week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, listener mail, when and if we have time, and here is your spoiler warning. Exercise caution. Josh, you had the pick, and it was a very strange, not strange, but it was a weird week. I guess weird and strange are the same word, but
yeah, they're synonyms.
Yeah, I mean, it was an uncanny week.
If you asked me, like comic book reader for 1,000 years, Josh, what's the definition of uncanny? I would pause. Like,
it means X-Men.
Exactly. I think it's a group of mutants.
Yeah, they're feared.
they protect the people who fear them the most. That's uncanny, right?
That's what it means, to protect those that fear you.
Isn't it? It's like unusual and weird, but, yeah, but there's another flavor to it.
Yeah.
Like if you saw something.
That's a muty flavor.
Like if you see something by the way, this is no uncanny. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about. I'm not about to be like the pick of the week is the X-Men. It isn't. It's not even that, not even Marvel. But like if you see like something that looks a lot like something else, then you go, that's uncanny.
Right, yeah.
What is canny?
Canny is a word.
Yeah.
Isn't it like smart?
Oh, you work on that while I start talking. The pick of the week is, this is a mouthful, DC Horror Presents : Sergeant Rock versus the Army of Death #5.
And to say I was surprised when I got the email from you would be an understatement. Canny means having a showing shrewdness and good judgment.
Wait a minute.
That just means the X-Men are really bad decisions.
That also doesn't have anything to do with when two things look alike and you say their resemblance is uncanny. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's interesting because uncanny is not just the opposite. Uncanny means strange or mysterious. So
okay,
they're unrelated.
Mysterious. I think that's the thing that weird doesn't have. It's a little, it's off. It's not natural.
Strange. It ain't right. Shadows.
We're going back to this. So this is a mini series. I believe there's one more issue.
Yes, six is six issues.
It is written by Bruce Campbell, he of the chin of the Sam Raimi movies, Ash himself, which normally is a thing like, look at this guy, he's doing the comics, and that's all there is to it. Right. But it's very understated. It just happens to be like, yeah, Bruce Campbell's writing this. There's nothing else that has to do with anything.
Yeah.
Art is by the incomparable Eduardo Risso.
Exactly. And
basically, it's a story of Sergeant Rock's little unit. It could just as easily be Nick Fury and the Howling Commandos.
Yes.
No appreciable difference here whatsoever.
It's easy company.
In this version, near the end of the war, so as we get into late 44, 1945, the Third Reich have started reanimating their soldiers. In fact, Dr. Morell, Hitler's personal doctor, has a lot to do with that. And you know, they're going in, the Sergeant Rock's people are going in, and they meet a bunch of Nazis, and basically they're like, we got to kill these zombie Nazis. That's what the book is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't plan to be anymore. It is the most straight up, we say good old superhero. This isn't superhero, but it's just like good old war comics.
Well, it's in the DC horror line, which is
right.
One of the new imprints. So it's a war comic, but it's also a horror book because there are Nazi zombies. But basically, it's a war comic.
It's not even a war comic. It's just like a bunch of action scenes and sure. Salty talk. It's all it is.
Well, that's basically war movies.
I
think we talked about the first issue.
Yes.
I don't know if it was a patron pick or – I remember we definitely talked about it.
Have you been reading it?
Well, yes and no. I think I read the first two. And then when the third one came out, I think I recall being like, I'm all right. Like,
sure.
I couldn't even remember what had happened. But so I'd fallen off of it, but you made us the pick. So I read this issue, and it's because you can pick this issue up and read it on its own. You don't have to know what's come before
any of them.
Like, I don't remember what had come before this at all. And this works as a one shot.
I mean, this is basically the story here is they're going after Hitler's bunker, period.
Do you think Bruce Campbell also read Blitzed?
I think he might have.
Because
I think he might have read the story.
The first panel here is Dr. Morell, who's not even named, shooting.
I think they named him earlier.
Probably in the miniseries. Shooting up Hitler so he has more energy and more pep.
Right. But what he's actually doing is turning Hitler into a zombie.
Right.
And so, you know, I've enjoyed every issue of this. Really. Just because it is no frills, it's gorgeous. They were just like, Eduardo Risso, draw this.
Oh my
and
God, it's beautiful.
It's a joy to watch that. Also because I'm just impressed that like Bruce Campbell did everything he was supposed to and nothing he wasn't. And he gave you exactly what this was. It's a perfectly cooked burger, as it were.
Well, that's the most impressive thing is...
Yes.
You know, you would think that Bruce Campbell had been writing comics for 10 years. It was...
Oh, yeah.
You know, as you said, it's very understated. He doesn't try to do too much. The dialogue is good, which is not surprising because he's a funny guy. People who can talk and are funny usually can write. And
he co-wrote Army of Darkness. Like, he's not... Like he's written, so it's not, you know, those one-liners that everybody knows. I was going to say you all know, but I was like, you all might be young for that. But, you know, all those Sam Raimi Ash movies, you know, he had a big hand in those scripts and it shows here. But just the holding back, like the economy of the whole thing is what really impressed me.
He's trusting Eduardo Risso.
Yes.
In a way that most people who are... I don't want to say new to comics. Maybe he's written other comics. But most people who aren't seasoned comic writers don't often do is trust their artists to tell the story. And,
yeah,
you know, it's I'm looking at these pages. There's a lot of big panels that allow Risso to take the heavy load here.
Yeah.
And really impressive. I was really impressed with the issue when I finished reading it.
Oh, yeah. And all the words are great. I mean, I know that's not really a pull quote, but like what's there is great. You know, it doesn't need to be anymore.
It's all the words are great, Joshua Flanagan, my fanboy.
It's not trying to impress me. And I'll tell you exactly, this isn't the spot where I got pick of the week, but this is why I got pick of the week. Because I looked over everything else and I was just like, eh. And then, like nothing really stuck out to me as being a pick of the week. And then I got to this and I was like, this had that great scene where they open the door and Hitler gives his zombie grin, and you see his and Ava Braun's eyes glowing, and then she attacks them from behind, and then comes after them again, and I was like, this is fucking nuts, and they stab him in the face. Reading, I
was like, is that zombie Ava Braun? Like, it
zombie
was...
Zombie Ava Braun! It was so good! It was just fun, like, everything you need, nothing you don't.
Yeah, and Sergeant Rock's, as you said, he's always basically been Nick Fury in the Howling Commandos, and Sergeant Rock and Easy Company, but he's a fun character. He's, you know, he's your no-nonsense sergeant on the ground, and I loved the little bit where they gave him the lighter in the plane and said, fuck Nazis, and then I went back to the cover. I was like, oh, okay, this is, I thought maybe it'd be Black Label, but it's DC Horror, so I guess the same rules apply.
Yeah. I literally, at that moment, Googled fuck Nazis Zippo. And if it existed, I would have bought it. I'm not exaggerating. I stopped reading it. And I was like, is that a real thing I can get? Because I was on it. And right after I sort of hit Saga, I go, you have no need for a Zippo. And I was like, I don't care. But I didn't find it.
It's a gorgeous book. Eduardo Risso he's one of the best. He's been one of the best artists in comics. And when did 100 Bullets start? Were we in college?
Yes, we were out of college. It was the early 2000s.
So it's still been 25 years or so. So he's 20, still got it.
But yeah. I mean, but I don't know what his career was like in Spain prior to that. Or Argentina, I think. I can't remember.
You're the expert.
I think he's from Argentina, but I'm not sure. But you know what? Like, it's funny. If you go back and you look at the early 100 Bullets, you know, like, his style is his style. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all, but just like, this artist presents himself in full, you know, with all this beautiful ink on the page. And when he doesn't fill in a background, it's stronger for it. Yes. Like, his use of negative space is amazing. His faces and expressions and, you know, like when something blows up, you know, he just does beautiful comic book pages, and he doesn't have a mainstream style so much. So you're not going to see him on Avengers or something like that. But every time he shows up, it's just a little gift from the comic gods.
Well, you saw him on Flashpoint Beyond, which was the Geoff Johns miniseries. And a good portion of the reason why I enjoyed it was because it was gorgeous. So it was awesome.
But that's still unusual. Like, he never really, whether he wanted to or they didn't, you know, he's just not, you know, Jesus Saez. He's not that. And we're better off for it. Oh, man, there's some great pages in here. There's a page, if you go to page 12 digitally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's four panels, and the top is just sort of this silhouette of a church as something blows up behind it. And then the bottom panel is like a cutaway of the bunker after the ground has been blown up around it. I loved all of this. I love being like, I thought they set us in the place. Zombies, whatever. They could have just been regular, but it almost made it silly. It made, like, you could hear, like, and the zombies aren't completely dumb.
No.
They're still like, the shrine. Like, it was great. It's fun. It's what I want comics to be. It's old man comics.
I enjoyed it.
Yep.
I definitely enjoyed it.
And I enjoyed it the most of anything. Those few pages, they fight Ava Braun and she comes back at them.
Again, if this sounds interesting and you haven't read it, you can just read this issue. It gives you all of the information you need. I may read six, I may not. It all depends on when it comes out. But if I don't read anymore, it's fine because it was a terrific issue.
Yeah, that's true.
Marvel took the week off, I think.
Yeah, they did.
But they had a couple of books come out. We haven't really talked much about The Amazing Spider-Man while this dark web thing's been going on. We talked about it maybe once or twice, but...
Well, what's interesting is that I keep not wanting to read it, and I keep reading it. And I don't know what that's about. I'm only reading Amazing. I know there's another half of the story that's happening somewhere else, but
there's more than that. I think there's several.
Yeah.
There's a checklist at the back. There's a lot.
I don't feel like I'm missing any of it.
No.
This one was notable. I don't like it, but I do like that it's fucking batshit. Like, they were like, you know what, Ben Reilly, let's just take him out a whole new door.
he's now Chasm, and he's a full-on bad guy, ruler King, of hell.
He's King Chasm.
Right.
He says, all hail King Chasm. And he became the king of, well, limbo, not hell.
Oh, right.
Because he kicked Madeline Pryor and took her weapon. I was like, that was awfully easy.
Well, there's some places where you hold the sword and you get to be the king. Although I don't think if you have to tell people to hail yourself, I think you're illegitimate. I think other people have to say all hail King Chasm.
Well, hell rules are different.
Yeah.
What was also notable is this has been Zeb Wells the whole time, who, you know, I don't love this story by any means, but he's an entertaining and, you know, quality comic book writer. There's some really great Jonah Jameson stuff in here. Mm-hmm. And then finally, Ed McGuinness on art.
Yeah, and doesn't look a whole hell of a lot like Ed McGuinness.
Yeah, I had to go back and look. I was like, who is this?
You can see it every now and then, but I don't know what he's doing differently, but it's slightly different than what it normally looks like. It's more fluid. It's softer.
Cliff Rathburn inking.
Yeah, that could be it.
The bits with the rec rap. So starting.
What was that joke?
Parker backwards. He's just it's a demon, and he's supposed to be fighting the demons, but it happens that this demon is a super fan of Peter Parker, and right. So he's helping him instead of fighting him.
It is Parker backwards.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I get it. It's always fun to see the X-Men interact with people who aren't X-Men, so you know that's fun that they're involved in this. And I'm not reading anything else but this, and
yeah,
it's fine. It's not my favorite, but I haven't hated it. I've tolerated.
Kind of, yeah. Like it's batshit.
It is batshit.
It's competently prepared batshit stuff, and I'm that's what's keeping me through. You know, through the whole thing. I love Jonah in this book, by the way.
He's been very funny. That he convinces the demons that he's also a demon because he's so much J. Jonah Jameson, mm-hmm. which was good.
And then the melodramatic stuff that happens between Chasm, I didn't even like saying it, and his...
King Chasm, please.
What's her name?
Madame
All
Breyer.
Hallows Eve.
Oh, his girlfriend, his wife?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's such a... Like from 12 issues ago, it's 180 doesn't seem to cover it, even though it's exactly what I mean. Like it's just they spun around four times and now we're just on a different dimension.
I mean, I'm reading the Mary Jane Black Cat book. So that's a tie-in book. I'm reading Gold Goblin, which decided to tie in issue two. So I'm reading that. But it also goes into Venom and it goes into Dark Web X-Men and Dark Web Miss Marvel and Dark Web Venom. Like there's a lot of books. In fact,
you don't need to do that, though.
In fact, after this issue, the final two parts of the story take place not in Spider-Man, but in Venom 16 and Dark Web Finale, neither of which I'm going to read.
Cool.
So I guess the story's over.
I hope. Let's get back to things.
For me, anyway.
Yeah. Well, it won't be, though. You kept thinking with the... Geez, was this Nick Spencer? Yeah, with a Nick Spencer run, you kept thinking, all right, this is the end of that centipede thing.
Sure.
Nope. It just kept going forever.
I mean, look, there's been worse.
Yes.
It's not... I didn't hate it.
It's not unreadable. No.
So Action Comics 1051 was the first issue of Dawn of DC, which is sort of their soft... It's not a reboot, but it's sort of a soft resetting for some of the characters. And so here we have the Superman family, and apparently now there are 55 characters in this book.
45 pages. I don't know. Well, I know that there's going to be extra stuff. Are they going to be this big going forward?
I think so. And it's not unusual in the history of Action Comics. Action Comics for most, probably, I don't know if it's most, but a good portion of its history has been an oversized book featuring several characters and stories. So that's not unusual, even, you know, certainly in the, you know, Gold and Silver Age and then not even.
Sure.
And then in the 2000s, they did it for a while. Like,
well, there's a reason it's called Action Comics. It
right,
was,
Action
it
Comics
has been
always been a place they can tell several kind of stories. Or several different stories, several characters. So that's not totally out of the realm. So here we have Superman returned from Warworld. Was that what the one? The name of the planet?
Yeah, yeah.
And his family's all together. And so we have basically Clark Kent, Jonathan Kent, Supergirl, Connor Kent, Steel's niece.
I was going to say Naomi, but it's not it.
The Chinese Superman,
I'm just Kenan Kong,
and then apparently the two kids he brought back from Warworld, who now are also part of the Superman family and get costumes. So
yeah,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's 8 members of the Superman family running around in this book, and what that means is someone's getting the short shrift, and it's most of them. There's on the pages.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that they back out of this a little. It's too much. It's
it felt chaotic.
Yeah.
It felt chaotic.
That said, like, I think Philip Kennedy Johnson is a really strong writer. He's been really good on this.
Yes.
This book has a long history of having a pretty good front story and an unreadable backstory. And that continues.
Well,
second story was good.
Hold on. So before we move on to the other stories, so this is the Rafa Sandoval drawn main story. You know, it was fine. You know, they tied in some of the anti-alien sentiment. I liked the first scene where Superman so quickly disarms everyone. He's just a blur, and like the bus comes up, or yeah, the van comes apart, and that was cool.
Yeah, it was really good.
That pose on page 8 where he's holding the bad guys at the title page, mm-hmm, I think that's exactly the pose from Kingdom Come when he appears for the first time in costume. I think it's exactly
that the bad same guy pose. Has a good old-fashioned mustache, and I thought that the mustache guy was from the flashback to like the early days, because they were kind of making it sound like before Superman got here, it was the 70s. And I was like, whatever. And then he walks up with that guy who looks like a criminal from the 70s. And I was like, oh, mm-hmm, that's a bold choice, criminal. You look like a criminal.
Yeah.
And then this Metallo story's been fun. Like, they're really leaning into evil Lex.
Which is good.
Yeah, it's fine.
What did you think about the Superman Lois sex joke?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, because I just got to it. So, like, it's a bondage. Like, they're into some shit.
It's a role play thing. It's like...
There's chains and a collar.
Well, that's... okay. Well, they're basically role playing Slave Leia. It's... Jonathan goes looking for something. What does he go looking for? Something in the house. Everyone's hanging out in the house.
Looking for board games.
Yeah, all of the Superman family are hanging out in the house. Lois and Steel are there, and Jonathan opens up a closet and he sees the Superman slave outfit from War World.
Yeah.
And says, what? And Lois like runs over and blocks the door and says, you know, remember we talked about boundaries? Ha ha ha. Like, so it's heavily implied that they get into a little bit of role play involving.
I gotta say, if there's anybody in the world who's going to get turned on by being a sub, it's gotta be Superman. You know what I mean? Like,
he's what you mean.
Yeah, he's got all the power all the time. And also,
I can see Lois being a dom.
Oh,
no
sure.
No problem.
I don't think that's... Yeah. I thought actually the first panel where he sees it in there with the chains, mm-hmm, that I thought it made some impact on him before they did the joke, because mm-hmm, the whole thing was everybody like loved their chains because their chains symbolized everything that
Superman
were.
And really
I thought,
loves his chains.
He's damaged. Yeah, but it's not that. It's a different thing.
He really, really loves his chains.
You know, the first story is a well-done story that has
just
too many people in
just
it.
Just a lot.
Yep.
Story two featured a very surprising and welcome art from Lee Weeks.
Yeah.
Written by Dan Jurgens, and it's a flashback to... This is the team that did the book that brought... Oh God, so convoluted. Back when there was the New 52 Superman, they brought back the other Superman from the other timeline, and they merged them into one character. And there was a book back then that this team did about the other Superman before they were merged. So there were at one point two Supermen running around, one in secret in a black suit. And this is the timeline of this book.
Okay, yeah. I was trying to remember what the black suit was.
It's best not to. Mm-hmm. But we have here is basically, you know, young Jonathan Kent on the farm with his parents, who are living in hiding because they haven't yet merged. Or maybe they have merged. I don't know. Who knows?
The actual story part of it, though, is that there's a shard. There's a piece of Doomsday.
Yeah.
And it goes missing. And we find out that John Kent has it because he found it on the ground. And he thinks that he can, you know, he's like, I'm the only one who can keep this safe.
Because
like,
the shard will basically, like a parasite, you know, take over your body and try to turn you into a Doomsday. So it's dangerous. That's interesting. It was a good story. I thought it was, you know, competent, well done. It's feels a little bit like they're trying to capitalize on the TV show because Clark's got a stubble beard here like the actor on the show does, but it's fine.
And then you had the final story here by Leah Williams with art by Marguerite Sauvage, which there was a lot of word balloons and people talking about metaphysical shit. And I was like, who okayed this?
Yeah, it's my least favorite.
Like, there's page after page of way too much dialogue that wasn't particularly interesting.
So
I would have liked the interaction between the characters, although I literally have no idea who's the redhead.
I don't know either, but
that's a problem.
So what you got in that, you haven't been reading the Lazarus specials, right?
No.
So what they're doing is they're taking characters who basically, you know, don't have a strong presence and giving them upgrades. And one of the things they did for Power Girl, she got hit by the Lazarus gunk, and now she has psychic powers.
Did she need an upgrade?
I would have said
like
no.
I feel like we've had to ignore the fact that she's as powerful as Superman, but is a tertiary character.
Yeah, I would have said no myself. But so she's now basically turned into a psychiatrist for this. I was going to say for the stars or for the superheroes, alongside this woman whose name I don't remember.
I mean, like if this was really about like them having a conversation about getting to know each other, doing whatever, and it was in any way, but I stopped. I did not finish the story. I was like, I don't know what this is. And
yeah,
it's annoying to read.
Her name. There's a lot of dialogue. Omen, Omen. That's the redhead.
Well, she puts on what looks like a Green Lantern outfit.
I'm just gonna say, someone at DC, and I suspect I know who, really loves collared jackets, and everyone's got them now.
Yeah, the flip.
I don't like Supergirl's new costume with the military jacket. I think it's wrong for her character.
Yeah.
It's okay on Jonathan just to give him something else, but they've got her in military jacket, no cape. It just feels wrong for her.
Yeah, I can. I
they're all wearing
that.
Coordinated outfits, basically. Her and what's the Chinese Superman's name?
Kenan Kong.
Kenan Kong and Jonathan and Supergirl all have very similar costumes, and they just look like a military unit, which is like the last thing Superman's family should be.
I'm not sure if this is okay for me to say, but I don't think that he read as Chinese. Like when I looked at him, he didn't. They all kind of looked the same, and it was they called him Kenan. I was like, oh, that's Superman of China.
Yeah,
and I don't know if that's my impression. Like he kind of looks. But he kind of looks like an African American almost, like his hair. It just and because we don't spend time with him, and he was out of costume, I wasn't sure who I was looking at. And then there was this weird. I guess Kellex is translating, which is nice.
Yeah, but it was just a lot. It felt very chaotic.
It's a lot.
I didn't dislike it. Like I said last week, I'm a little nervous about all these Dawn of DC things, the changes they're making characters, but you know. As a roadmap for action, I thought it was okay.
I trust the writer.
Oh, for sure.
Do as good a job as possible with the, you know, whatever the editorial edicts are.
There's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4 Superman books, which is not unusual in the history of Superman. Well,
since they have a hard time having a good Superman book, that's kind of.
I mean, that's the whole 90s, the whole period I grew up, you know, there were sure. 4 books, one a week. Action Superman, Adventures of Superman, John Kent, and Superboy, The Man of Tomorrow. Too many Superboys. Make a choice.
Yeah. What are they going to do? I'm so powerful, I don't know what to do about it. That's
the Human Target, 11, book 11. So there was a bit of confusion this week, Josh. This book was originally solicited as 12 issues. We've all been, you know, reading it in that way. And then this past week on Instagram, Tom King said, you know, book 11, the final issue is out this week, and everyone freaked out. And I wouldn't have been surprised if they had cut it short in issue. Sometimes that happens. But
sure.
So I was reading this issue as if it was the final issue in my head, you know, and you read things differently. And so I get to the end and it said, you know, to be concluded. And I was like, or to be continued. And I was like, what? Because anyway, I think that people might be let down by this. This is the issue 11. So this is the revelation of them who poisoned Christopher Chance.
Mm-hmm.
But we've said from the beginning that we thought it was ice. So
kind of had to be.
I wasn't surprised. This is like every Philip Marlowe story involves the, you know, girl that comes into the office, and 9 times out of 10 she's the bad guy. So
I think to me, the real drama of this is still that, all right, he knows and she knows that he knows.
Right.
But they still seem to be very much in love. Also, he's supposed to be dying shortly.
Right. He dies tomorrow, basically.
So it's got to be one more twist coming or two.
Something's going to happen. Well, I mean, she poisoned him, but not out of malice or not because she's secretly a supervillain. So that makes it complicated.
Well, she was trying to murder Lex Luthor, though.
Right, but who hasn't wanted to murder Lex Luthor?
You know. Somebody had to do it.
She did it out of revenge because Lex Luthor instigated her death. There's sort of the meta commentary on superheroes is that she got killed by Lex Luthor, so then she came back to life and tried to kill him. And, you know,
and it that does seem very fair. Like, it's, if he actually kills you, you should be able to kill him.
And so it's not like, you know, he uncovered Kang, and it's like, no, this is someone he's in love with, and she tried to kill the guy that killed her and accidentally killed this guy. And so it's complex. But she has a temper.
Viking ice princess.
Right. She's got a temper, and she's really, really, really powerful. I liked the conversation about could she freeze the entire ocean. That was a good scene.
I feel like that came from a different conversation. Tom was like, I'm going to put that in there.
Could you? Because
there was no resolution. I don't think she answered it.
No, she wouldn't answer it.
Yeah, just move along.
I don't know.
What did you think of this issue? It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. It was, you know, like we had to go through the thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean from the very beginning. Like, this was my prediction, so it wasn't like, oh, wow. Well, you know, I wasn't subverted.
But
it wasn't like,
knew
what the
already.
Twist. I just figured it was her. So
we knew as early as last issue that she was responsible.
Right. We knew at the end of last issue. But even then, and early in the series, you go back and listen. Yeah. We talked about.
No, I know.
She's
probably
the bad guy, but the quote unquote bad guy. So I wasn't like blowing my socks off because I was expecting it. And I thought it was more sweet and sorrowful than anything. And I'm really, as you said, there's one more issue to go. So something is left to happen. And I'm really curious to see what that is. Well, I don't think this doesn't take away from anything.
I think what's interesting
in the series so far
is I keep wondering if we're going to come or Chance is going to come to some kind of revelation about himself, because they are hinting around the edges of it. He's talking about it all that. Well, I get killed for money. You know, I make myself a target. I had problems with my dad, and that hasn't really progressed or been added to. But I feel like he's been hinting at it the whole time. I feel like we need to have some sort of, not like the final answer, but some sort of culmination of his inner turmoil. Although, I don't know. Like, do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I feel like we're working towards some kind of character arc, but really, he's been steady level the entire way. He hasn't really changed at all.
I mean, the book does end on with him, you know, with a gun pointed at her head, and then we cut away from that to the beach. So something's gonna have to be resolved here.
Yeah,
but it was. I mean, I liked it. It just was like when it tells you what you think it was going to tell you, it's less, you know, exciting.
Yeah,
I don't fault the story at all. I mean, I still love this book. I'm still, you know, so excited. It was a little strange that books came out like, was it 2 weeks in a row or every other week, this one?
I feel like it was very recently.
It was very recent. It was less than a month, so I was a little concerned that they were burning it off, but I guess not. Who knows why things happen.
Maybe the last one's bigger or something like that.
Maybe.
Hope so. This episode is brought to you by Cedar Draw Cider. Emily is the cider maker. She was, listen to this, Connor, she was an oncology nurse for 20 years before creating fine cider from our orchard, their orchard. John is the husband and sales guy.
I thought maybe you had bought an orchard and didn't tell me.
I would. I live in an orchard area. Okay. It's not, John is the husband and sales guy, and he used to be a drug and alcohol counselor before starting to sell the alcohol. That's true. They're not Angry Orchard, nor are they Ace Cider. They are true European-style dry cider made with fruit from old-growth orchards in the Pacific Northwest. That all sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
You can check out their tasting room in Buell, Idaho, where their cider feels just like home. You can also go to cedardrawcider.com for more info, and you can place orders there. You can get the ciders. There's several varieties. You can read about them. Be sure and visit them if you happen to be near or around Buell, Idaho. Enjoy the cider, and we thank them for their support of iFanboy. Connor, how do you feel about cider?
I was going to ask you, because I feel like you I mean, you don't drink a ton, but I think you've had ciders.
Yeah, I am
a cider guy.
It's my favorite of the alcohols.
Right.
I like it dry. I like it a little tart.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. I don't think I've ever had a dry European style cider, and I'm very curious.
Yeah, You know, as long, I don't really know. I tend to think of, I was like, European style must be warm. It's sort of not joyful.
Because my thing with ciders is often it's often too sweet. But if it's more dry than sweet, then that's something I'm down for.
Well, I know that out here, like, I think that, like, the both north, northern parts, east and west, is, I think, tend to be where the best comes from. He said that, you know, his apples are from the Pacific Northwest. And I know out here we have sort of this, there's a big craft cider thing around here.
Right.
And you can get all sorts of different kinds. And for a while I was really going through them and, you know, it's like trying all the different ones. But I like what he's selling. I went through the website here and I looked, and I'm very, very likely going to order some of these guys.
They should make European style dry cider donuts. I don't know if that's a thing. I just want a donut.
Yeah, that's fine. I want some of the cider. I don't like it. It's kind of the only alcohol I really like.
Josh, who negotiated this deal? Where's my case of cider?
I don't disagree with you. We have to talk with the ad sales department. It's a problem.
I hope they have a t-shirt that says, Buell love it.
It's Bjorfest, your favorite.
Buell Fest.
That should be it. I bet that is a thing.
Buell Fest 2023. Buell love it. And then it's their logo. It's a free t-shirt idea for you.
John and Emily, changing things up, living the dream, doing the stuff. I hope it goes really well. And I want to try that cider.
I applaud them. Because I think one thing we all went through the last couple of years is re-examining. I'm not saying that's why they did it, but we've all got sort of re-examined where we are in our lives, what we're doing with it, what's making us happy. And if this is fueling that happiness, that's so awesome that they did that. And I'm looking forward to trying some Cedar Draw Cider at cedardrawcider.com.
How do you feel about Justice Society of America, number 2?
Well, first of all, I feel like this first issue came out 4 months ago.
Really?
I don't know. I feel, you know, with our accelerated publishing schedules, monthly books feel like they come out a long time ago. And I don't even know if this came out a month ago, because a month ago we were on break. So I think maybe this came out more than a month ago.
Maybe, but only a little.
I love this fucking wacky nonsense. Like, Jeff Johns, Michael Janin, Jerry Ordway, Scott Collins, utilizing the entire width and breadth of the DC continuity with a classic, properly costumed Justice Society. Mm-hmm. Bring it on. I'll take it every bit of it. It's a nice companion piece to the Stargirl book that we didn't talk about last week, but I really have been enjoying it. Jeff Johns is also writing. This is deep dive stuff. This is Bronze Age Earth 2 stuff. That's where Helena comes from. It's deep, and I loved it. It's wacky.
So on paper, I really wouldn't like this very much.
Yeah.
And when I thought about it, when I got to the second issue, I thought about it and I was like, do I want to read this? And I was like, I think I really enjoyed the first one. But it works for me for reasons I can't fully explain. I mean, maybe it's the Jeff Johns effect and the really great art.
No one else could do this, quite frankly. Right. He's taking Batman Year One, 1940s Justice Society, Bronze Age Earth 2, some new characters he's introduced, a daughter for Jay Garrick, which was introduced in the Stargirl book last week, Judy Garrick. He's put it all in the pot, and it's working.
Yeah, but also there's structure here.
Yeah.
That he gained from that Watchmen book he did. I mean, and others too, but I can see a direct line because there's all these convergent timelines that are all sort of going on. I'm really interested in the Lena Wayne story. Like I'm genuinely invested in that story, and I wouldn't have expected that.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the coloring or what, but. The Michael Janin, I really want to know how to say his name properly. It almost looks like Kevin Maguire. Like I sometimes find this stuff to be kind of a little stiff, not bad, but a little stiff. But, and I noticed this in the last issue too, is that the way they're coloring it, I think it's smoothing it out a bit. Like those first two pages where she wakes up in the JSA infirmary, don't look like him at all. If you said who drew this, I wouldn't know who that was.
Do you notice that if you, in the coloring too, they're using like a dot pitch?
Yeah, that's awesome.
It is awesome. I've been seen as I've, and it's through all the sections. It's not just the parts, you know, done by Ordway or whatever.
If this had been my week, this might have been the pick of the week.
I can see that.
It's just on the rails enough, and it's great.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Speaking of Jeff Johns, Junkyard Joe number 4. This I wish this book kept going. The letter in the back says I think there's two more issues in that, moving on to other things. But I really like this. I thought the last issue was terrific. I thought this issue was good.
I was going to say I read the last issue before I got to this one because it had been while I wasn't catching up.
Yeah.
The last issue would have been my pick of the week if I had it.
It came out over
the
break, and I remember reading it going, oh shit, like that was really, really good. And
it was really good. And then I turned the page, and the rest of it is like stuff about veterans. And I was like, I was touched. I was like, oh man. You know, I haven't talked to Jeff Johns in a long time, but he's a really sincere person and he cares about those kind of things.
Yeah.
And to see him put that into his work and then do the other stuff, I was just, you know, it was like readers can send in a photo and story of their veteran relatives. And I was like, God, that's amazing.
They got permission to use Peanuts and Calvin Hobbes in this.
Yeah. I was like, how the? I goes, that's real. And then I looked at the bottom and it says done with permission. I was like, this is an image book.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's producing.
I mean, it's a crazy story of this retired cartoonist who did the popular Junkyard Joe series and now the real Junkyard Joe, who was a robot who fought in Vietnam. I mean, it's all saying it out loud. Is silly, but the tone is so sort of sad and slow.
Whatever I thought it was going to be, it isn't. And whatever I thought was going to happen at the end of the last issue isn't what happened. This guy is a sad loner, and then he finds the kid spying on him, and then finds the other kid spying on him, and he adopts him as like his little gang. And I was like, well, I didn't see that coming, you know. And then you've got this other weird, like the
robot
guy
assassins
in the robot, yeah, whatever that is, the threat.
Actually, they're not robots, they're wearing masks or people.
Yeah, they're like, they remind, the one guy reminds me of that clockwork Nazi guy from Hellboy who scares the shit out of me still. But we don't know anything about Junkyard Joe. It's all strange and it's so compelling. I really like this book.
You know the establishing shots in Fargo where it's just like the snowy plains? That's how I feel reading this book. Looking at those scenes, because it just takes place in a snowy part of the world. I don't remember what part of the country.
It's quiet and cold. They're in Indiana.
And it just feels, that is the tone of this book, where it's like, it's quiet and cold. And it's really interesting. And Gary Frank, you know, is very, very, very good. Like, the acting in the faces here is just incredible.
And the kids look like kids.
Yeah.
And by the way, the kids here are like, they're like the kids from an 80s movie. There's like, they've just come from a different town.
Yeah, it's true.
But then some of the like I felt terrible for these kids the same way that I felt terrible for the kid in the Fablemans, you know, like he goes to a school and people are just horrible to them because they're half Asian or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh God, this is the worst, you know?
Yeah.
And the kid's like, we have our own robot. And I was like, this, everything is in this book. There's the veterans affairs guy who goes to help him and plow his driveway. And
that's why I wish this book would keep going. But they said in the back that, you know, they have this whole world they're building and they're moving on to that stuff. So
I know, but how exciting. You know, like, this is so different than what was the book? Not Radioactive Man, but the one that preceded this.
Basically, the ghost.
Yeah. No, I don't remember. But either way, you know, it's apparently
Geiger,
the same
Geiger,
universe.
Geiger,
that's right. Good title. That I can't remember. Good title, but it's a completely different book.
It's a different flavor of Jeff Johns, and it's really working.
And Gary Frank.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, if this is whatever this is, Jeff Johns' third act or whatever it is, it's really interesting.
I'm still reading Damn Them All from Boom, Simon Spurrier, Charlie Adlard. I'm having a hard time with it. I find it slightly convoluted, but it does make me wish that Simon Spurrier was still just writing Constantine. Yeah. Like that's my takeaway from this book is this is fine. I wish he was still doing that Constantine book because that's what he's doing here. It's just Constantine's niece, but I like the demons are getting really convoluted and hard for me to follow. But
so
otherwise, I enjoy it.
You're right. So what I did was I picked this up and I started reading it and I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I realized I hadn't read 3.
Mm.
And because at first I was like, ugh, why am I even reading this book? And what I thought it was the Charles Soule book about the demons and the coins.
Oh, right.
This one also has demons and coins.
Yeah.
No,
No,
the Demons and Coins book, that one. Yeah.
Hell to Pay, right. Which I tried to stick with and then stopped. And then I realized I hadn't read it. I went back and I read 3. I thought 3 was great, and then this was a lot better. 4, the thing that I'm enjoying about this is the revisioning of what demons are, their history, and then the economy of how this works. And I don't mean economy like spare. I mean like literally like money exchanging, like who has to do who for what for who.
The demons are like currency.
Yeah, and it's multidimensional, and I like that from the first issue. Like when a demon shows up, people don't know what to fucking do because it's all happening not in their plane of space. It's a really imaginative take on something that has been beaten into the ground by comics, and I respect that. I was like Charlie Adlard, huh? It's an interesting thing for him to come back to. The coloring does a ton for this book and is sort of making those demons look like they're both in this world and out of it. The characterization again of those demons, like the one demon is killing something and he's apologizing. I was like, this is so weird. So I appreciate it.
It's just bizarre to me that in a world with so many comics that we couldn't keep a Constantine book.
I know.
You know?
Who knows?
They're putting out so many books.
There's so many people who would write that book for free. You know what I mean?
like that book was incredible that he was doing. And I realized it was out of continuity and it wasn't the Constantine that shows up in the Justice League for whatever stupid reason. But all the books they're publishing, they could have kept that one going. They really had something special there.
When he focuses. You know, like I've had a lot of books where it's just fucking batshit crazy, which is clearly something he loves to do. And I can't grab onto those, but like this book has focus, that Hellblazer book had focus. He's got a real mind on him for sure. I'm enjoying it.
This week we had issue 5, not 4, of Exterminators, the final issue of this miniseries. And you know what? I enjoyed it. It's a little gimmicky. The whole conceit of this miniseries, and this has been written by Leah Williams and drawn by Carlos Gomez, is it's a bit more mature. It's a bit, I think they called it grindhousey. I don't know if that's true or not, but it says mature readers on the, and it's a bit more mature. There's a lot more sex talk and there's a lot more cursing, even if it's blocked out. It's sort of like your daddy's ex-women, because it's Dazzler and it's Jubilee and it's Boom Boom and X-23 fighting his vampires. I actually thought it was super fun and I would read way more of this. Like make this an ongoing. I'll read it. It sort of lets them cut loose a little bit more, you know.
And same writer as that story at the end of Action Comics. So props for going both ways with the book.
Yeah, it's very different. Way less words.
Yeah.
And legitimately nice. Funny and. Is this Leah Williams or is that a script mistake?
No,
it is Leah Williams. All right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Totally. That's why I'm confused because it's way, way different than that Power Girl backup. So this
going
was fun.
For different things.
It sort of allows them to be a bit racier without being, it's not cheesecakey racy. It's more just like
what's
girls.
What's the pitch for this?
Like, Exterminators is Dazzler's boyfriend, who is a vampire. Turns out he's a cheating asshole. And in plotting their revenge on Dazzler's cheating asshole boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, they discover the whole vampire coven of people who are stealing people for feeding purposes. And you know how they've been intertwining the vampires with the X-Men for a while.
Sure.
And it just leads to this sort of, wacky adventure where they, end up, in this underground world and fighting thing. It's just been kind of over the top and silly, and Dracula gets involved, and it's all about getting revenge on Dazzler's asshole boyfriend, partially by throwing all his vinyl out the window. I enjoyed it, and it says that the Exterminators will return. I'm happy to return with them if they keep the tone and the adventure, which I enjoyed. Hey, those were the books. It was a weird week.
Yeah.
But we enjoyed reading the books, but the patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy, they vote to add a book to the rundown. I don't know why I put the iPad away. There's still another comic to talk about.
Yeah,
They vote to add a book to the rundown. This week, the vote was relatively close. A lot of books got consideration, but this week, the winner was Archie versus the World, number one. It's a one-shot. from Archie Comics, written by Aubrey Sitterson with art by Jed Doherty, colors by Matt Herms and Doug Garbach, and letters by Jack Morelli. And this is the latest in a series of one-shots that take the idea of Archie and put it into some sort of other thing. Do you remember on the show we talked about that Jughead the Barbarian story that Aubrey wrote?
Vaguely.
Yeah, so this was originally, according to the essay in the back, supposed to be a extension of that, and they decided to change it to Mad Max. And so this is basically Archie Mad Max, and it's a one-shot. So it doesn't really, it's more of like this crazy sort of overview of the world. And you know what? I had fun reading it.
I would say that's right.
At the end of the day, it is what it is. It's a weird Archie Mad Max one-shot. It doesn't explain things. Archie's got superpowers. So does Reggie. Don't know why. Don't really care. It's just more of like we're dropping you in this unfamiliar world, even though the characters are familiar, and we're just going to do a quick thing with it and leave. Like I was fine with it. I respected it.
I don't quite know. I was like, I don't think this is so much for me, but I can respect it. Like, I don't actually have enough. I don't have enough Archie to really, I think, appreciate. I can recognize the names. I know the places, but it doesn't really.
And that's really all there was. I mean, there wasn't like anything in here. They're like,
yeah,
oh,
no,
an Archie
I know. But so, okay, well, then I'm sort of like, oh, but Aubrey Sitterson is exactly the right person to write the tone of this kind of thing. Yeah. And all of the dialogue was spot on with what it should have been in this, you know, overarching, you know, too melodramatic and over the top. And the art worked in the exact same way. Jed Doherty, who I don't know, like, this was perfect for what it was and what it was supposed to be. I enjoyed it. If it had been any longer, I probably would have kind of lost my
yeah, it
interest.
Moves at a breakneck pace. I mean, there's yes. no stopping here because they only have so many pages to tell this story in this world and get in and out of it. It's being narrated by a grizzled old Jughead in the future who's looking back on their adventures. And, you know, Archie is the hero. He's got he's super strong and has some powers, and he's the one who sort of roams a post, climate change disastered world. And there's gangs. It's Mad Max. And Veronica's been kidnapped. And Betty is the mechanic who's also in love with Archie. Sabrina, the teenage witch, is there. She's sort of the seer, oracle. Cheryl is a sort of a queen of whatever she is, the queen of the wastes. You know, it just all happens very quickly. It's like rescue Veronica, you know, montage. There's like a two-page montage in the middle where they're having their adventures, and then they find Veronica and save. Like, it's a short story, and it was fine.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
it was fun. I didn't love it, but I didn't. I was happy to have read it.
I mean, I don't know why they're doing this or what for, but you know, that's fine. I don't need to know. They're doing more.
do we have people buy these books?
Eh, whatever. Just make them.
Yeah, they're
fine.
Next time is Betty, the final girl. I don't know. They're just doing these one shots. That's fine. Just do them.
Yeah.
That's fine with me. Ratings on Archie versus the World, number one. Out of five.
3.25.
Yeah, I went 3.5. That's yeah. basically what I'm thinking. It's like, it was fine. I enjoyed it. It was like, okay, that was cool. Huh. Don't need any more. Yeah. So, not sticking with it because it's a one shot, and I probably won't read any more of the single issues. But you never know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. Every patron can add a book to the rundown, and the patrons are the ones who directly support the show. They unlock shows for everyone. They unlock the Media Explode and the Talk Explode and the Books Explode shows, and they have formed a really great community over the years. We've had patrons for 6 years, I think, at this point, and
really.
Yeah, they've got a tight little community. There's a Discord community. There's a Facebook community. They hang out. They chat all week. They plot things on the patron pick discussions. We see all the plotting, and they're a good group. They're a really good group. You know, we've been lucky over the years to have had a really strong community and a really respectful community for the most part, and really interesting and smart people. And I really like that about what we've done. That's one of the things I'm most proud of. And it still continues to this day through the patrons. So if you want to be part of a great community, you can be a patron for as little as $1 a month. And that's great. And you can help support the show. We keep the bills paid and the lights on. And be part of a great group. You get a monthly hangout, which we just did last week, which was incredibly fun, I thought. One of the most fun ones I've done in a while.
Yep.
And we try to make it fun for everyone. We just revamped the patron goals. So if you become a patron or you're curious, you can go to patreon.com/ifanboy. You can scroll down till you find the announcement about new stretch goals. They're getting rid of stretch goals at Patreon, but we might keep them anyway. We'll see. And then as we talked about last week, we're still revamping another portion of being a patron, which is just taking longer than expected because life is getting in the way in some ways. But we will have a totally revamped patron system pretty soon, and I'm looking forward to that. So consider being a patron at patreon.com/ifanboy. Also, ifanboy.threadless.com is our t-shirt store where you can buy one of our 12 designs on any kind of t-shirt you want, or a long sleeve t-shirt, or a sweatshirt, or anything. I think they have tank tops as well. Oh, they do have tank shirts. Tops. They do. So check that out. We have great designs. We are always thinking about new ones, and hopefully we'll bring in new ones soon. ifanboy.com/support is our digital tip jar. Via PayPal, ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can find the Books Blood Books, and bookshop.org is our partner to help support local bookstores. When you buy through them, local bookstores get a little bit of money. It tells you how much when you purchase, and you can dedicate it to one store or just to the pot of money that goes to several stores. It's a great organization. And I just bought a book from them yesterday. Or using them. Not from them, but using them. So there you go. Those are all the ways you can help support the show. Patreon, Threadless, PayPal, Amazon, and Bookshop. So thank you for doing any of those things. It helps keep the lights on. We were just talking before the show about something we needed to buy for this for the show, and that's how it gets paid for. So thank you.
Now, I put my name on this.
It's me,
power,
isn't it?
But it's your power. Yes. Yes.
Okay. So here, Josh just kicked me in the ball. So if you give it the $5 higher level as a patron, you get a superpower live on the show. I saw the script and saw your initial, so I didn't even think about this.
I specifically went back when I was doing – I did the script very quickly. We're recording earlier than normally, and so yeah. I was trying to get it done. But I specifically went back and listened to the part of the old show to make sure I was the one who did it. Mm-hmm. I did, and I checked off the spreadsheet. I made sure I did that correctly, and then I blew it at the last second.
That's okay. The thing is, I'm always trying to think about them, but I never write them down. And sometimes they stick in my brain, sometimes they don't. This patron power is for Helen Spearing. Helen, thanks for being a patron. And, you know, I had this thought the other day. Helen can, and maybe this has already been given, if so, I apologize. You guys can team up if that's the case. Helen can revitalize any piece of film. So if you're, you know, watching a movie from the 20s and the film is all nitrogen film and it's all run down and it hasn't been kept up, she can touch that film and it will be as if it was shot yesterday with the highest grade film technology. And not just for movie films, she could do it for pictures or anything. She can clean up and high definitionize all films, all forms of film. Only works for film, though.
That's pretty useful.
Yeah.
So you can do that and then like make a copy right away with the perfect.
Yes, exactly.
The perfect print. I remember the old days where you'd be excited because you were going to go see something on a new print.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a remaster or whatever, but I remember going see, I think at Cornell, like Raiders of the Lost Ark on a new print.
Well, the theater that we go to here in LA, the New Beverly, only shows on film. So they're, you know, it's all, that's what they advertise if it's, you know, how the print is.
Yeah.
So there you go. Helen could get a good, nice little side job as fixing up old film stock or people's photographs.
I like that. That's useful. And not just useful, but, you know, historically relevant and important.
Now, Josh, you have the time, so I don't know where we are in time here.
We can do the one.
You decide.
We'll see where we are.
You pick.
All right. So, Kane T writes in and says, "What is an example of a type of story that only works and or works better in the comic book format over other types of media?" And I think I have a couple of answers for this, but I am curious. I was curious if you would have an answer for this. and what it would be.
I don't think there's anything that only works in comics.
No.
But I think there's things that are better. Like, I would have said many years ago, superhero stories work better in comics, but, you know, there's some really great animated superhero stories and movies, obviously. I still think superhero stories probably work best in comics.
Well, story then becomes a kind of interesting term, because movie is a kind of story, and then a, you know, 20 issue arc is a kind of story.
Right. I think time dilation works really well in comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you can really pause on a moment in a way that you can't really do in a moving image.
A movie needs to have perhaps more forward motion than a comic book does. And I think that for a slam bam fast action kind of story, a three issue arc or something like that, a movie can do that really well.
Mm-hmm.
The longer form of it, you want to take, like, to me, I think of like a Vertigo 60 issue series or something like that. I think that does that better than anything else can. You can do it with TV shows, series, but it doesn't resonate with me the same. There's only a few TV shows that, like, would suck me in the way that, like, reading all of Preacher does. Like, Preacher to me was my example of a thing that, I mean, they tried to make it on TV, but because of all sorts of reasons, it if nothing else, it wasn't the same thing. So there's also the physical concerns you've got. So the MCU, you know, right, they're out of guys because they all got old.
Right.
You don't have to do that in comics. You can just, you know, they can stay. So, you know, that Preacher story goes over. There's no limit on time in an illustration. You can age the characters as much as you want. There's not going to be, you don't have to hold your disbelief back, because the images you're not believing the images. You don't have to be fooled by anything. You know what I mean? They can just focus on telling that story. They don't have to, well, we have to make this look good. We have to make this believable. You're already in a state of not quite needing to, your disbelief's already in the right place for a comic book.
Yeah. I'm curious, you've been rewatching, or maybe I don't know if you're still doing it. You've been watching the Justice League cartoon with your kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you feel about that as a medium for those kind of stories?
I mean, they're light.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, they're really, I mean, not light for like the medium,
sure,
you know, in terms of animated series, but in, you know, compared to the comics, they're light. But also they're facsimiles. There's not like, they're not necessarily the original stories. They, you know, you can see the constraints of budget and time, and, you know, you're never going to see an amazing backdrop or sequence like you would in a comic book.
Right.
You know, like, it always has to look uniform because of the way that they're produced. It isn't really going to surprise you visually, you know, mm-hmm. in the way that, like, think about a Liam Sharp 2-page spread. You can't do that anywhere but in comics. You kind of can, but you can't linger on it. A movie and a TV show, you can't linger on it. You can't go back to it and look. You can, but, you know, under normal circumstances, it's not designed that way.
Yeah, I mean, there are things that are great about seeing the characters in motion. I remember thinking this, the first time I had the thought was watching Spectacular Spider-Man, the Spider-Man cartoon from many years ago.
Yeah.
Where you were further enough along in animation at that point where it was really seamless and fluid and exciting. And I remember thinking, this might be the best medium for superheroes, because they could really play with the movement of Spider-Man in a way you just can't on a static image. But they all have their pluses and minuses. You get that stuff, but you don't get the depth that you get from a comic story. Even as they get shorter, even as we lose pages, even as we lose issues per arc, it's still, there's a depth of storytelling you can't really get. Maybe novels would probably be the closest.
To me, that's the closest thing to the kind of comics that I'm talking about is novels. But you get world-class illustration at the same time in comic book storytelling. And they're both different. They both have different strengths. I don't want to see my favorite novels made into a comic book, because it's going to lose something. It's going to lose that depth. That is why I go to do those things.
Which is why we don't, you know, often are not interested in like licensed comics.
The Expanse comics.
It's just loses something.
But I think there's definitely, I mean, and you know, we're in love with the medium, you know, in a way that a lot of readers aren't. And you know, I wouldn't want to lose that part for certain stories. But to me, I mean, could you do Saga in another medium, really?
No. Well, maybe. I mean, the thing's maybe. I don't know.
But it wouldn't have...
It would be different.
Yes. It would lose some of the things that make the comic book brilliant. Because just, it would have to. I mean, you know, but then sometimes it just surprised you. That I really want to watch it again at some point. But that Watchmen TV show, that was crazy. Yeah. I kept watching that show like, wow, you really evoked the comic. That was my whole thing the whole time. I was like, why would you appreciate any of this if you weren't intimately familiar with that comic book? But they did it and people liked it. So
yeah.
I don't know. You know, but that's an exception, not the rule.
Yeah, I mean, I think this sprawling universe of superhero stories, the never-ending battle, works best in comics. But you can tell great superhero stories in movies. You can tell great superhero stories in animation and novels. I've read great superhero novels. I've seen great superhero movies. I've seen great superhero cartoons and TV shows. So you can do them anywhere, but they work best in the original form because what they do requires the original form, the way they tell stories.
I'm trying to think of an example that was a really good comic book where the live action or animation adaptation was better. And the only thing I've come up with is The Boys. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That is true.
Vigo. I also think Road to Perdition was a better movie than it was a book.
Yeah, that's probably right.
But The Boys, again, I think, also true.
Yeah. For whatever reason.
They're the exceptions.
You know, I guess the Invincible cartoon is a pretty good example of sort of...
It was very good.
It was, and I'm not quite going to say it was equal to, but it really did a lot of things that were great in the comic book.
You can tell great superhero stories in any medium. It's just, the best is comics, but you can still do it, and it still works format.
But the demands of the medium of television animation are going to make them have to necessarily adjust it for all sorts of reasons. How long it has to be, who they're trying to please. They're not trying to please comic books.
There's always compromises that have to be made in other mediums.
Yeah. And so for the most part, you know, which is why there was a long time, and I think we're not fully past it, but there was a long time where comics were clearly being made as movie pitches left and right. And they're largely forgettable.
Companies exist only for that.
Yeah, I know, but I feel like they don't come across me. I don't read them because they were largely you could see it. You could see it from a mile away, and it felt, you know, ingenuine. And I don't blame anybody, not a single person for doing it because they, you know, had to make a living or do whatever. But people who are making comic books because they want to tell a comic book story are going to always impress me more.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the answer. Is that everything else? For me, I try not to rank the medium because you can tell a great slice of life personal story in a comic, but I probably usually prefer it on screen because the emotion of the actors overwhelms the art for me personally. Uh-huh. But that,
you know, you unless know, the artist, okay, Box Office Poison, very going way back. It's a slice of life, you know, sort of drama, whatever. I think that would suck as a TV show. You know, the cartooning is such a big part of what that is. And, and the sort of way it's made, and it's a little ramshackle, and it's a little, you know, going here and there. It doesn't, a lot of times comics don't have to be structured to the extent that a major production has to.
Oh, sure.
Because they can't afford to be loose with it in the same way.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, it's almost hard to answer the question.
Yeah, but it's interesting to talk about.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right.
Contact at ifanboy.com is where you can write in, like Kane did, to get your email on the show. Thanks for writing in. This past week, we had our Media Explode show come out where Josh and I and Ron, our other host, talked about many of the things we watched while we were on break from doing the Media Explode because we hadn't done one since November. So we've talked about lots of TV shows.
We talked about Connor's rage issues.
My media rage issues, which have not gone away.
Yeah.
And it was fun. I actually really, really enjoyed doing that one and really, really enjoyed editing it. It was a fun conversation. And then what it was three guys who hadn't been all together talking to each other outside of the Hangouts, hadn't talked in a while. And it was that kind of conversation. And then the week before that, we had the Black Sad All Fall Down Part 1, Booksplode. Too many B's in this title. Booksplode, Black Sad All Fall Down Part 1. Josh and I reviewed that book, and that was fun too. So check that out in the feed. You can find our shows back there. Josh, where are the shows?
Mm-hmm. That book is best as a comic book. Like, I know it exists in other mediums or whatever, but those drawings, you can't beat that. If you made a movie, they would lose something.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, think about it. If it was a great hand-animated thing, it might be beautiful.
Maybe, but it would... I don't know. It's like it to me. It's like you wouldn't want to animate a painting. I mean, you could because it'd be like cool to see it do that or something. But like a great painting is what it is. It's a still or a photo. You know, at some point they're going to Harry Potterize all photos and they're all going to start moving or whatever. It's going to suck. I don't want to see either side of the V for Victory sailor kiss, which I know has a whole story to it that isn't. But you know what I mean? Like that's a frozen moment. Anyway, sure. You can find our library of over 1,200 shows. And how pretentious have I been over the past 10 minutes? Pretty up there. It's a great medium, and I love it, and I am fierce about its strengths. 1,200 shows and counting over at ifanboy.com and wherever you can find your podcast. Many, many ways, many places. You don't need me for that. Google, how do I download a podcast? You'll find a lot of stuff. I like the Overcast app myself, but also that's just momentum at this point. Follow us at iFanboy Comics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. Sometimes you'll see the best of the week in panels. Connor's been on a tear lately. He does it, not me. So just make that clear.
You're you welcome to individually. Send me some.
I know, but you have a whole writing format. I just want to send you a picture.
No, just send me the panel and tell me what you want the caption to be, and I'll put it up.
That's writing it.
This is our let's have a meeting. Let's have a content meeting right now.
I also really just like, I will send you panels and just pictures of things. And I kind of like that's just ours. Just our little thing. You know, we got to we make everything for everybody else. Individually, we are CS Kilpatrick and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram, where we are. I was talking about Japanese barbecue sauce today.
Subscribe to youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where you'll find all of our old video shows. There are many, 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 many hours of old video shows we used to do. And you can find this show there as well. We post this Pick of the Week show every week to YouTube. So if you want to watch it there or listen to it there while you're doing other things, then check it out, youtube.com/ifanboy. And also, please consider leaving a review or a star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. That really helps the show. We thank you for doing so. We appreciate that. And that's it. We are done with this week. Time for food.
Not really. It's earlier than usual.
That's true. We're not done for the week. We're done with this week in comics, though.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I'm going to edit this.
No, so you're not done. I'm done.
No, you're done. Boy, done. This went real downhill for me.
Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.
So, y'all niggas, man. God's here, man. God's here.